Welcome to another edition of the Oncology Peer Review on the Go podcast. I'm your host, Matthew Fowler, and today is Monday, August 16th. This week, we discuss a review article published in the June issue of the journal Oncology, and it was titled Routine Breast Cancer Screening in Average Risk Women Younger Than 50 Years, Current Paradigms Based on National Guidelines. I spoke with Dr. Ananth Ravi, the co-founder and chief science and clinical officer of Mali Surgical, and Dr. Randy Miles, an assistant professor in the Department of Radiology and clinical service chief in the Division of Breast Imaging at Massachusetts General Hospital. We spoke about their work with breast cancer screenings for women under the age of 50. The conversation really focused on the current breast cancer screening guidelines, the risks and benefits of screening for women between the ages of 40 and 49, the different imaging techniques and what roles they play, as well as the future direction of breast cancer screening. Dr. Ravi, Dr. Miles, thank you so much for taking some time to hop on the pod and speak with me a little bit about your work. Let's just kind of start with, we'll get to the details in a bit, but what brought the both of you to kind of pursue research on these current breast cancer paradigms and the screening national guidelines? You know, what was the motivating factor for this?
Definitely, as a clinician, as a radiologist specializing in breast imaging, seeing that there's a lot of confusion among patients, and also physicians, among physicians over when women should initiate screening, and also how often they should undergo screening. And a lot of that's due to, different recommendations by national guidelines. We know patients are receiving this variable information, so really wanted to explore how we could move to continue the conversation and move it forward and how to address this issue to remove that confusion and misunderstandings that can occur.
And very much the same. I mean, I started off at my trade is as a medical physicist, and I've done extensive research in women's in medical imaging as well as surgery. And from there, I transitioned over to Mali Surgical, which is a women's health company that's directed at a wire-free non-radioactive localization technology. But it's given me the opportunity to speak with a number of patients and a number of providers all across North America. And you know, it's one thing for patients to be confused based off of the variety of recommendations from these national organizations, but I'm also finding providers are confused as to the origin story. Why are we where we are? Why did different, what is the reasoning behind it? And that kind of curiosity led me to try and work with Randy to try and figure out, you know, how are we where we are? We have multiple groups out there, national bodies, very respected, all of them, but they have different recommendations. And so this paper is an attempt to kind of make sense of all of that and perhaps give clarity to both patients and physicians alike.
Right. And so you kind of bring me to it. You know, you both produced, along with your other colleagues, a nice kind of review for the journal Oncology that published in the June issue. And the focus really is on the current paradigm based on national guidelines for breast cancer screening. So could we talk a little bit about the current breast cancer screening guidelines? You know, what are they and kind of the main points that you need to make before really understanding the review and the conclusions that you draw? We'll start with you, Dr. Ravi.
Yeah, I mean, present landscape is pretty confusing. There is a number of guidances out there and they go all over the place. And specifically when it comes to younger women than 50 years old, and it's sort of in that range from 40 to 49, there's so much uncertainty there. And it's not a small population in the US, that's 10 million women. That's a sizable population of patients that really providers and patients are struggling. What do we do? What do we do with these in terms of screening? And so just to give you an example, I'll go through the few. So in the paper, we talk about the US Preventative Task Force. They recommend biannual screening beyond 50 years old versus you have the more dedicated societies like the Society of Breast Imaging, the American Society of Breast Surgeons, and then you have ACR and NCCN guidelines that say, you know, annual screening at the age of 40. And even for those patients that are at a higher risk, you have annual screening even earlier than that. So, you know, this disparity really comes from the approach at which they have looked at the harms and benefits of screening I think that was what we were trying to find out. Like, what is the reason for these differences? All of them are based off of solid review of the evidence there is, but they all come up to with slightly different perturbations on the recommendations. So it was an interesting, it was, at least for me, it was very illustrative as to what were the negotiating factors that these different groups discussed.
Yeah, I think those are all great points. And you know, just to, you know, just to kind of follow up on that, these are all reputable societies and organizations that have based their recommendations on evidence-based medicine. So as you can imagine, how this could, cause providers to be not as sure about what to do, with these guidelines. And, you know, we are in a state now where in medicine, you know, there is shared decision making where you really want to discuss with your patients about the risks and the benefits of what you're recommending. So to take that away from the providers where there is confusion because of the differing guidelines, it really is doing a disservice to that process if they can't provide, you know, kind of concrete recommendations that are supported by societies as a whole.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point when you talk about these reputable sources all kind of giving you differing opinions and kind of, you know, advice. It's bound to cause some confusion. So that definitely makes sense. And both of you kind of mentioned the risks and the benefits of screening at specific ages. So specifically looking at that younger group of women, you know, let's start with the benefits. What are the benefits of breast cancer screening that you found in your review?
Definitely. So I think the one thing to emphasize is that all of the societies and organizations that we mentioned in the paper, they all support breast cancer screening. Right. So women should get screened. It's just the when and how often. And a lot of that discussion the issues where there is maybe potentially contradictory recommendations is really based in that 40 to 49 year old age group. We do know that the women within this age group, they do develop, there's a lower incidence of breast cancer in that group. But we also know that these women, when they do develop breast cancer, that it's usually more aggressive, which means it grows at a faster rate. It's more likely to spread, and as we know, if we do catch breast cancer early before it spreads, I mean, we're pretty much talking about nearly 100%, 5-year survival rate. So the benefit of screening the women at that younger age is that we're more likely to catch these cancers, which are more likely to be more aggressive and are more likely to spread. Before they reach that state where we can really guarantee that we can pretty much guarantee that we can treat it and these women can live, live longer lives.
And just completely agree. And just more on top of that is when we catch it at an earlier stage, it also gives you the ability to give less toxic therapies, right? So the use of chemotherapy is less. Your surgical cosmetic results are going to be improved because you don't have to do as much of an extensive surgery. And there's been evidence to show that the number of life years gained in that population is more. The trade-off benefits to harm it may be a little bit less than with 50, but there's still a definite value to screening this younger population. And what's also a very interesting piece is that, especially in the African-American community, you know, these recommendations of not screening early actually are disproportionately putting that community at risk because they have a higher rate of triple negative disease, almost twice that of their white counterparts. And the distribution of breast cancer is younger in the African American community. So, you know, by having this recommendation that's 50 and above, it is not really completely, it is disproportionately affecting that. And I think changing that to a little bit lower would, you know, balance that racial disparity as well. So I think there are definite, and to Dr. Miles' point, there's a lot of added benefits there to screening at a lower age.
Yeah, and support that. We also know that, you know, African-American women are more likely to die of breast cancer than white women. So there is a mortality disparity there. So by screening later, we may be unintentionally, widening that disparity based off those points that Dr. Robbie made about, you know, that group in particular, developing breast cancer at an earlier age and developing typically more aggressive disease.
So from what I've heard, it seems the benefits are really clear to screening. So, but what about the flip side? What really are the risks that you found and how do they compare with some of the benefits that you saw? Dr. Ravi, we'll start with you.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest concern that was identified in the literature was the rates of false positive. And typically when, you know, women are younger, their breast density is a lot higher. So that lends to the sensitivity of mammography screening being impacted. But at the time, you know, when all of these large scale trials were done, they were using film-based mammographic screening and it was older technology. So likely those screening guidelines, if you were to do that today with the newer techniques of tomosynthesis, contrast enhanced mammography, and digital mammography, we may end up seeing a different result in terms of the preponderance of false positives, right? So there's that, and then the psychological distress of like and anxiety of being called back. So there was a number of those. One of the things that we found was a lot of, so people talk about overdiagnosis, but there's a lot of uncertainty in the literature. And I think it's a little bit inflated, that risk, because there was not a lot of solid evidence for that one. But really the false positive rate and callback rate was something that definitely is higher in this. And it's likely due to anatomical differences of the population. But I suspect, and Dr. Miles can comment as well, is that, you know, as our technology is evolving and our options for better imaging modalities are enabled, that callback rate is not the same as it was when these guidelines and screening guidelines were developed.
Definitely. And when Dr. Robbie mentions overdiagnosis, that just refers to screen detected breast cancers that would not have progressed to clinical presentation during a patient's lifetime. It's a cancer that clinically, even though it's there, would not have impacted that patient's lifespan. Touching on that, you know, there's no way that we can determine which cancers, would be clinically or not clinically significant. And I think it would be really hard to talk to a patient about, you know, having a cancer and saying, you know, this doesn't really matter. You know, I think it's something where, you know, until we can determine which cancers, will progress or not progress, I think that's a really difficult topic to discuss. Discussing about the false, you know, positive examinations, you know, they do lead to, they can lead to increased psychological distress, as was mentioned, and increased, financial burden. But we have newer technology and we have 3D breast imaging, which is used at most sites. And just so that, everyone kind of gets a sense of what we see when we look at a mammogram, there are two main components of the breast. We have fat, and then we also have the fibroglandular tissue that we see in the breast. And when we are assessing the density, we look at the ratio of the fibroglandular tissue to the fat. So the fat is lucent or clear on the mammogram. So, and the fibroglandular tissue is white on the mammogram. And when cancers develop, they usually present as either white calcifications or a white mass or distortion. So when you have more fibroglandular tissue on the mammogram, which is that, you know, it has that white appearance, it sometimes can obscure a cancer because that cancer is also white. But with the 3D tomosynthesis images, we can really take slices through the breast and look at those sequentially to see if there is kind of an underlying cancer. So it helps us to identify cancers when we have this issue of dense breast tissue that we that may potentially obscure a cancer. So, you know, we have better technology that we can use to overcome, you know, this issue or this risk of false positive examinations. And if you go to a center that has specialized breast imagers, you know, those recall rates are a lot lower. I know at MGH, our recall rate, you know, borders around 5%, which means out of 100 women, we're only recalling 5 to come back for additional imaging, which means, you know, our positive predictive value, you know, for diagnosing a cancer and recommending a biopsy, they're pretty high. So we really are taking strides and really focusing on that. You know, that's one of the main things that we focus on to really try to limit, you know, issues that could be related to false positive examinations.
And actually, just add to that, and you mentioned it already there, Dr. Miles, but it's also that financial toxicity piece. Mm-hmm. In addition to the anxiety and the additional trauma of having to do subsequent follow-up and investigations, there is a financial component of this too, especially the U.S. our U.S. patients and also the Canadian healthcare system as well, where I'm located. There's a toxicity to the whole healthcare system with these callbacks, and I think that is one of the things that we talk about as well. When you're doing a large screening-based program, you have additional callbacks, but like we're mentioning, with novel technology, that callback rate is not the same as it was when it was just film-based mammography.
So Dr. Ravi started to kind of allude to these advancements in technology, and Dr. Miles, you really started to kind of describe the importance of them. So this was kind of a pretty significant portion of your review, in my opinion. So I wanted to kind of talk a little bit about it. You know, what is really the role of some of these imaging techniques that you mentioned, you know, including mammographic imaging, ultrasound, and MRI, and could you kind of just like briefly describe each one of them and what kind of individual role they play in the overall process?
Definitely. I'll start off by saying mammography, it remains the gold standard for breast cancer screening. So every woman within screening age should be receiving routine mammogram exams. And I would recommend that every woman also receive the 3D tomosynthesis with that as well, despite their risk factors, or despite their age, if they're within that screening range, just because it really does help us to, you know, make sure that we can fully evaluate the breast and we can reduce those callbacks, you know, from, you know, tissue that just may be overlapping on itself or false positive examinations, and also helps us to identify those cancers that may be obscured. So I think just starting there, I would recommend that for every woman. Some of these more advanced techniques, a lot of them are targeted to women who are above a certain risk level. The contrast enhanced mammo, you know, it's your standard mammogram. You know, we adjust some of the technique, but we actually add contrast, which allows us to identify a property of cancer that's known as angiogenesis. So cancers or these tumors are usually growing really quickly, and they are creating these blood vessels, and they're recruiting blood vessels, which are typically pretty leaky. So with that contrast, these tumors, which are demonstrating, you know, angiogenesis, they'll uptake contrast very rapidly, and that contrast will wash out. So this provides us another provides another feature that we can evaluate to help us identify tumors. And that's something that allows us to overcome some of the limitations of mammography, including, you know, evaluating breasts that, in terms of evaluating dense breasts. Screening breast ultrasound is used at a lot of centers. It's used at a lot of centers, and a lot of it is regional in terms of how frequent screening breast ultrasound is used. It also allows us to overcome the issue of dense breast tissue. And what happens there is that we take we use ultrasound to look at all quadrants of the breast and in the subareolar region to evaluate for any masses that may be present. It does offer an incremental increase in cancer detection. I would say one of the downsides of screening ultrasound is that, you know, although we identify, you know, more cancers, there is an increase also in false positive examinations that are associated with that examination. And you also need a certain level of technical expertise if you're not using the automated breast ultrasound in order to make sure that you are fully evaluating the breast and you have all the correct parameters set up for the machine. So that can limit a lot of centers who may not have the ability to have a, you know, dedicated sonographer or a physician to image the patient. And then lastly, we have breast MRI, you know, which is recommended as a screening tool in women who are high risk, above a 20% lifetime risk, you know, based on the American Cancer Society recommendations. And there are a variety of reasons why a woman could be put in that category. A lot of times it is associated with a genetic mutation that they may have. BRCA1 and BRCA2 are two of the more common mutations that a lot of people know about. Strong family history and some other factors that could lead to that. So women who are above that risk level, 20%, are recommended to have screening breast MRI starting at age 25. And it's a great tool. It's our most sensitive test for identifying breast cancer. It allows us to take advantage, again, of angiogenesis or the ability for these tumors to recruit and create these blood vessels. So we're able to identify breast cancers, and it's a highly sensitive test, but it does pick up a lot of other things that are not cancer. And that's the reason that we only recommend it in women who are high risk, because we don't want to be identifying a lot of non-cancerous findings, which may lead to unnecessary biopsies, which could, you know, be, you know, very distressing for patients. And so.
Absolutely.
And so Dr. Miles gave us a lot of great information. So we'll give him a quick break and I'll turn to you, Dr. Ravi. So to kind of look at the article and this conversation we've had, if you could sum everything up into kind of one or two main takeaways you would want a listener, a viewer, or a reader of the article to have, what would you say that would be?
I think the main takeaway here is that it looks like there is now going to be a convergence of guidance recommendations in terms of these average risk populations. And I've got to commend the U.S. Preventative Task Force. They're reopening this issue. They just released a publicly disclosed research proposal on how they're going to conduct a reevaluation of their guidance. But it does sound like for average risk women, starting screening annually at the age of 40 is the right thing to do. The risk to harm ratio there does really favor a life year gain benefit. And Dr. Miles is saying that our technology is vastly improved. So initially with, you know, film-based mammography where the breast was compressed, get all your tissue, your images just look like, you know, you're trying to find a snowman in a snowstorm. It was really hard because everything was very hazy and you're trying to find these small little microcalcifications in this very bright, dense image. Now you move over to digital mammography, you're able to magnify these images, you have these contrasts. And you go another step further to tomosynthesis. Now it's not just a 2D compressed image, you've got these slices. And you can now discern more finer detail in the images, and you have contrast enhancement, which brings in physiology and function, and then ultrasound and mammography, ultrasound and then MRI, and you're now interrogating that tissue non-invasively, so there's not like a traumatic needle poke or a puncture and those kind of subsequent events. You're interrogating it with much more sensitivity than we were able to do, and all of these things working in concert I think will add to life years benefit to these average risk young women without the additional subsequent harm of false positives and subsequent invest. So that's the difference right now. And I think the literature is demonstrating that. I think, you know, as with everything in medicine, as techniques improve and get better, you know, we have to constantly revisit what our thinking is on national and international guidances. And it has to migrate upwards with the technology as well.
And so you kind of touched on this idea with the guidelines converging. And so that kind of touched a little bit on the future and what comes next. So Dr. Miles, is there anything to add on what you think is coming down the road in terms of screening that you think is really important?
Yeah, I think this is definitely an important conversation, you know, in terms of us moving the issue forward. I think a lot of the advances that are coming are really going to help us to identify women who, you know, may be at an increased risk compared to others, where we can be more accurate in that determination and also can gain that information quicker than them having to, you know, go to a high-risk appointment with a specialist. I think AI is going to be really big in that, where we'll be able to use these tools potentially by just using the current mammogram to help us risk stratify. And that may help us to determine which women need, you know, more frequent screening versus less screening. So I think it's just important to just continue to have the conversation to move towards a consensus, just so that, you know, patients can really work with providers as they are going through this process of shared decision-making.
And so to sum things up, we'll start with you, Dr. Ravi. Was there anything that we haven't touched on or I haven't asked about the review or screening in general that you think is important to share here?
No, I think you've done a great job. Thanks for hosting. I think the bottom line is screening is absolutely important. You know, that is the bottom line. Please go get screened. You know, I know there's a lot of concern about COVID-19 and things like that. There's not an excuse to not get screened. There are safety precautions that all the providers are providing to make sure you're safe. You have to go get screened, because if you don't, we'll catch it later. And then the treatment options get narrow. So you have to get screened and screen appropriately.
And Dr. Miles, I see you shaking your head, so I'm not sure you have too much more to add besides that. So if you have a comment, please.
Yeah, I really love that. I think I just would want to reiterate that. Definitely get screened. Screening mammography, that is the gold standard. So just make sure, you know, you're getting screened and you're staying up to date with your screening. Because if there is something that develops, we want to catch it early. Because we catch it early, you know, more than likely, this is something that you will be able to, you know, survive from and have a long life. So. Oh, and then the other point is to talk to all your, you know, talk to your physicians, talk to your radiologist. If you are able to, you know, if you go to a breast imaging center, you have the opportunity to talk to a radiologist. You can ask them these questions about screening, and they should, you know, be able to answer additional questions in addition to your conversations with your provider. You know, you don't just have to rely on that information from your primary care doctor, but your radiologist or your breast imaging radiologist may be able to kind of give you some additional information that may help you in your medical decision making related to your breast cancer screening.
Absolutely. Well, I'm really excited for viewers and listeners to kind of get even more information on this topic. I know the article has been out a bit, so kind of returning back to this information, I think, is really valuable. Dr. Ravi, Dr. Miles, thank you so much for taking some time to talk to me about this research. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Oncology Peer Review on the Go podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever podcasts are available. Or you can listen online at cancernetwork.com/resources/podcast. The Oncology Peer Review on the Go podcast is the official podcast of Cancer Network, the home of the journal Oncology. For more information, visit us at cancernetwork.com and find us on Twitter at Cancer Network without the O, or on Facebook and LinkedIn at Cancer Network. Thanks so much for tuning in, and we'll see you again next time.